night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Welcome to the program. Great to have everybody here as we kick off a live show. I know these have been somewhat infrequent lately, and I apologize for that, but I appreciate you all being here. I've also been told through several people that YouTube is being a little funky tonight. I don't necessarily know what that means. Some folks were saying they were trying to watch other streams, and those streams weren't cooperating, a lot of errors. I hope you don't have that problem with this stream, but if you do, remember, it'll be archived not only on YouTube for later viewing if you need to go back and catch up on the program, but you can also find it at the normal podcast sources. Best places for that, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, but you can find it at all major podcast distribution platforms. We have a real treat for you tonight. I told you last week we're going to try to do some things a little bit differently as this program evolves. And as you know, I have to spend a lot of time working on my other program, the Independence Gang. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to have a guest like we normally do, and that guest will be John Doc Likens. We're looking forward to hearing about his paranormal experiences, his investigations, also some other things that he's done that I think you'll find quite interesting. But in addition to me being here talking about it, asking questions, we're going to have a couple other experts with us. We'll have Britt Griffith, you know Britt from Ghost Hunters, and we'll have psychic medium Rebecca Foster, good friend of the program, has been on a lot of our shows in the past, and knows a lot about investigating and also obviously connecting to the spirit world. So all of them will be joining us, and we'll get started here. John, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us, and I'm really excited to try this new format out, and you're a great guy to start it with. So thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you.
And Rebecca, always good to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us. I'm looking forward to your perspective as we talk about this stuff with John tonight. Before we get started, let people know right now, and we'll do it again at the end, where they can follow your work.
Most of it's posted on godstool.com, and I post most of my updates there. If you Google my name, Dr. Rebecca Foster, clairvoyant medium, you'll find the links.
And Britt, I think, can you hear us? Do you know we're live, Britt? Because you're...
Yeah, I'm excited. I haven't done a paranormal interview like this. Normally, I'm the one getting talked to or asked questions of. So it's gonna be fun to be in the other seat and make John answer all the tough questions. So I hope you're ready.
Hey, it's JV here. You know I've asked for your support in the past, and I'm going to do it again because it's really, really important. And there are a couple of ways you can support the show, and it's so inexpensive. Now, you can go to Patreon, and you can become a Patreon supporter, and we really, really encourage that. But there's also another way. If you look at the description of the podcast, if you're a podcast listener, and you scroll down to the bottom, there's a way to support the show directly through the podcast app. And it's only 99 cents a month. It's less than a buck. You probably have that change in your couch right now. That dollar a month, less than a dollar, goes a long way in helping us produce this program, provide great interviews for you during the course of the week. I thank you in advance because the support is so important to the program.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, John, let's get started by finding a little bit about your history, particularly, you know, how did you get started with an interest in the paranormal? That doesn't happen for everybody. There are, you know, those of us in this particular chat obviously all got that bug at some point. But what about you? How did it start for you?
Well, I guess growing up, I had two grandmothers. One was in Harrison, Arkansas, and one was in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from. And they both enjoyed UFOs and just different things. And my one grandmother in Ohio used to take us to graveyards and walk around at night and just to hear the quiet, she said. But it kind of, the UFO thing started picking up at first the most. And then later on, I was a Navy hospital corpsman stationed with the Marine Corps at Parris Island, South Carolina. And I had a wild experience there during Hurricane David in 1979. That really freaked me out, to be quite honest with you. And after that, I kept thinking, I got to do this. I got to start doing it. So 1987, I was mapping some ghost towns in Southeast Ohio. I mean, not investigating per se, but just mapping the towns for a group. And I had something happen. I don't know if you ever heard of the Moonville Tunnel down that area, and King Switch and Ingham Station. And I said, oh man, I just got to keep doing this. I said, I love this stuff. And
here you are.
And here I am.
So as you started to get an awareness and a sense of some of these things, what were your original thoughts? Some of us go into this field thinking, okay, ghosts are, you know, spirits in a religious sense. Some of us think that ghosts are maybe interdimensional or some type of time travel even. Did you have any kind of sense when you started?
Well, no, not really. But I shortly after all this happened, I would say, well, this has to do with your basic, you know, ghost is caught maybe between heaven and earth at first. And then I'm Catholic, so I it was like my church was kind of giving me a ration of crap about it. But it was just one of those things. And I finally kind of decided on the fact that I really don't know exactly what a ghost is, but I'm going to find out.
Rebecca, we have all chased that question. Some of us has come up with answers. But in your heart, when you talk about ghosts or when you talk to ghosts, Rebecca, what do you think they are?
Well, I talk to two different types of energies. And there are ghosts, which are what I consider the energies that have not yet transferred themselves and moved towards the heavenly realm. They're stuck in this dimension, or not even in this dimension. They're stuck a few dimensions out away from us. And then there are spirits that have crossed over. And with that, they're able to really travel anywhere they want to go. And that's what I always try to convince them of, is it's okay to leave here, because once you check in, we are like what I consider the zero dimension. We're here. And then when I'm talking to people, they are in the heavenly realm, is about five dimensions out. And then between that, you're getting ghosts, those that are right next to us, you're getting shadow figures, so there's several different dimensions.
Britt, you heard John talk about how he developed a bit of an interest here and how it started to become a bit of a fever. You had a similar experience. You started to question some of these things, decided you wanted to look for answers. John's looking for answers. Rebecca's looking for answers. We're all looking for answers. Are answers there to be found?
Well, if we look long enough and hard enough and we develop enough of the proper equipment that can at some point in life see what's going on, see into the next realm of energy, wherever these ghosts are coming from. I mean, think about all the UFO stuff that's going on right now with the Navy. And they've said the only reason they can see this stuff right now, it was an upgrade to radar, the radar units, and now they're seeing all this stuff. So was the stuff there all along? And then they made an advancement in equipment. Now they can see it. I'm hoping the same thing happens in the ghost world or the spirit world, that we make an advancement at some point in equipment, and all of a sudden, boom, we can see it. Now, we have been marching along and improving stuff and having more array of environmental monitoring equipment, and which is helping us dial in to where the paranormal activity happens at. So, yeah, I forgot the beginning of the question, but I think John, who's been doing this since before dirt, all the way to now, he has seen a wide arc from back in the days with just sticks and divining rods to where we're now using all this electronic equipment, and we have a much better understanding, and, you know, full spectrum cameras. And so it's going to be an interesting story to hear John's story tonight, because he's been doing this a damn long time.
John, tell us about those early days when you first started investigating. I was reading about some of the work you did early on. And, you know, obviously in the late 80s, early 90s, I would assume, I wasn't investigating back then, but I would have to assume it was a little bit different than it is now. Yeah. Tell me how those early days were for you.
Well, first of all, it was all word of mouth. There was no internet, of course. And if you put an ad in the Lancaster Eagle Gazette paper, they probably come get you and put you in a rubber room somewhere. So it was all word of mouth, and the equipment that I started out, I think it was a BMP-100 Sony, about the size of a small Volkswagen on your shoulder, and a tape recorder with actual real tape. And that's basically what I had and I worked with. And but we didn't, of course, have like Audacity program to read it or anything like that. And then later on, things came along. I think the first thing that really caught my eye that I liked was the K2 meter. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And it's kind of, you know, but back then we had basically nothing to work with. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And who did you look to as mentors or guides, maybe? You know, what examples were you following back then? You know, there were people. There were people as early as, well, probably predate the 70s. But I know Elaine and the Warrens, anyway, were investigating the Warrens, in the 70s. You know, there were some that were out. Hans Holzer was out there. There were some out there. Yeah. Who were you using as role models for this?
I guess Hans Holzer was, you know, I got a hold of every book or anything I could get on him. And I kind of, you know, emulated the best I could on how he did it. And the calmness of the voice and that sort of thing was kind of key to me. And it still freaks me out to this day. I see when I watch the Holzer files that, and I really like the show, when they go back to Hans and his medium, it was so dramatic and, you know, kind of the way it was just so different, you know. And I at that point in time, we weren't using mediums, and matter of fact, I didn't know where the heck I could find one. You know, I really didn't, except, you know, but I emulated him more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when Ghost Hunters came along, I remember I was at my girlfriend's house, and she goes, you like that ghost stuff? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, look at this new show. And I'm like, oh. And so Taps became my kind of way to do things.
Yeah. And that happened for a lot of people. Rebecca, John's talking about not being able to locate a medium to use in his early work. Where do you think, I'll let you answer this question, then I'll let you ask a question of John about his early days here, but of investigating, but where do you think a medium belongs in the scope of an investigation?
I think it depends really on the team itself. Some people I don't think want a medium around. At least I've experienced both sides that do and don't. I just think that having someone such as myself, as long as they're legit, it helps to triangulate all of the experiences and to bring a different perspective to not just the scientific equipment that's being used, but again, to be able to say, okay, this is what's happening, and then have it verified on several pieces of equipment and even an SLS and, you know, have a recording at the same time. So as far as having a medium available, as long as you have one that's legit and it's not going to, that person is not going to bring harm to your team, it's worth having someone like that on, at least an investigation. I don't like to investigate. I like to tell you what's going to go, but I don't want to go sit in some dark cubby hole.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Did you want to ask John anything about his early days of investigating?
Well, I guess, John, having, you know, got some of your backstory, and sometimes people will say sensitive individuals such as yourself would find it difficult to be on an investigation because you're opening yourself up to so much. And looking at your backstory and everything that you've gone through, mm-hmm. find that when you are on investigations, that vulnerability creates more of, let's say, a portal for energy to use. Be
more vulnerable? Yeah, if I understood correctly what you said. Well, first of all, I would love to have a medium with our new group right now. I really would. The reason I would love to have one on board is I've worked with them once before, and they would say, hey, don't go in there, don't do this, and that made me feel very secure. I mean, I was like, oh, yeah. Good. And I mean, a big time. But I think they're great. And I would really, finding the legit one for me has been kind of hard. And I hate to say that. And to tell you the truth, I've kind of hard finding some legit paranormal investigators these days too. I mean, you know, that goes that way too. I hope that answered your question. Yeah.
That's good. Brett, you know, you also were an investigator that saw ghost hunters for the first time, and it changed your perspective too, didn't it? I mean, that was, you know, before you actually started participating with the show, you looked to that show as a game changer.
Right. Well, I mean, I joined an organized group about a year and a half before Ghost Hunters came on the air. And I remember the days sitting at the Starbucks with your group and trying to figure out, how are we going to get into this building? How are we going to get into that house? Because people would laugh at you. You're, what? Get out of here. Because it was still taboo. We couldn't talk about it. No one could talk about it without getting laughed at. And then I remember the first time Ghost Hunters came on, which was like, what was it, 2004? I watched it for the first time. And at the time, I was married. I'm not anymore. I watched it. At the end of the show, I looked over at my wife, Holly, and I said, I think this is the first paranormal show I can actually watch. Now, And then from there on, it was like, oh my God, here came all the cases. Holy crap. It was like the door got kicked wide open. Had a place to go. People could talk about it. People could. Now, there was a lot of fake people. Where's Jay and Grant? It's like, well, that's a TV show. We're not TV people, you know? And it was kind of crazy. But it changed my life in the way that it really opened. Hold on. Ghost Hunters came on the air.
Brett. I hate to interrupt you, but your mic is all funky. It's crackly and it's breaking up. We're not hearing you much.
Okay, how about that? Is that any better?
That sounds a lot better.
There okay. You go.
All right, but okay. I thought it was hitting my jaw, so I pushed it out a little bit. So basically, my point is that Ghost Hunters opened the door for us in organized groups to really start getting into places, and we did. And even before Ghost Hunters came on the air, I was always kind of a techie guy. I'm about as sensitive as a brick. I am the polar opposite of Rebecca. I don't feel anything. All of my wives and girlfriends will tell you that. I don't feel anything, but I love the equipment. And all we're doing, right, John? All we're doing, we're monitoring the environment for fluctuations in the EMF field, temperature field, barometric pressure field, so many that don't fluctuate. And when they go into flux and then you get an EVP at that exact same time, that is like so interesting to me. And then it's like, so how did that all happen? How did it harness that energy in the EMF field? Why did it affect the barometric pressure? I mean, all these questions. I'm wondering, John, you've been doing this forever, even before we had this equipment. I mean, were you able to do this so much that, you know, you walk into a room and it's like, oh, it's a little different, even though you're not sensitive, but you can just tell the energy was off. Were you ever able to do that, or did you always have to have equipment?
Well, no, to an extent. I mean, I'm sure, Brett, you've been on, you know, Ghost Hunters, and you probably walked into a room and you get that heavy feeling. It's like oh, it's heavy in here. You know, it just feels like you're in a London fog almost. And yeah. But otherwise from that, if I could throw in something real quick, I got my first SLS camera a few years ago. And just before that, my brother-in-law, Jamie, passed away. He drowned, and his side of the family didn't have, you know, anywhere to bury him. So I said, hey, we were good friends. I'll keep his urn. So it sits in a nice place in the house. And so one day I got it out, and I was home alone, and I was like, well, I can't. I was trying to map my dog and the cat and the parrot. And that didn't work. So I decided to sit in the hall or stand in the hallway and take, you know, it has a large screen on it, take it in the mirror, and I could see it, and I held it just right, and it started mapping the top part of my head. So I moved it down, and all of a sudden, stick figure appears on my left side, which means it's actually on your right side. And I went, oh, wow. I got that out of my mouth. And something yanked my back of my belt loop on my Levi's hard, like boom. And I about crap my pants. I was like, you know, I got to get out of here. So, that's the first time I ever felt something on an investigation. And I have hours of SLS film and saying, if you're Jamie, raise your hand, you know, that sort of thing. But that I am like Brett is. I as a medium wise, I'm like a big rock, you know,
so,
except for that one time.
So why are you using your SLL camera? Are you, SLS, do you have another camera that, I'm sorry, SLS camera. Are you using another camera to document that there's actually nobody there? So like you have a GoPro going, it's got the whole room so that you could say, look, there's no one there. Why is it picking something up?
Well, what I have is I have, I kind of built a thing that holds different, you know, cameras that have different slots in it. And right now I have it one set up where there's SLS and a GoPro right beside of it. And then I bought a FLIR one for my phone. So I made a contraption for that, set that. And then now, I don't know if you've heard of this yet, it's an app. For the first time, I found a ghost app that actually works. It's called GhostTube and SLS. And I put those things match up perfectly. And so you know, this guy just wanted to throw that out there. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's a free app, which is really scary. And I actually, you know, try to make say, you know, sure. And what I have been lately, Ron, one of my guys, he'll stand behind me with a handy cam filming all of that at the same time. So I like to back up either three to four ways of backing that evidence, backing it up.
Yeah, the more redundancy you can have, the better. I want to ask you, John, about your specific experience on Paris Island, because that seemed to be a real pivotal point for you, where you had your own experience. Therefore, it probably fueled that curiosity even more than it had prior. Yeah.
Sure. On I used to know the date by heart, but in 1979, Hurricane David crossed over Savannah and came up our way to Beaufort, South Carolina, is where Paris Island is very near. And they evacuated all of the permanent personnel except hospital corpsmen, one dental tech, three nurses, two PAs, and security police. And they kept all the recruits there and the drill instructors there. So, you know, it was kind of a weird feeling anyway with the base being that empty. And I got sent out. This radio message came in that they had two really sick recruits. And it, now, when they Paranormal 911 did this, they had to use a bit of a poetic license, I guess, and, you know, edit some things because they didn't want to use, you know, the term Paris Island. And so it was called Undisclosed Marine Base. But when I got out to these guys, you know, no one knows how the radio got there, because when I got there, it was a group of recruits that were going to be going home that were ill. And they had one corporal in charge of it, and he was one of the ill people. You know, he was kind of watching over him. So I immediately moved everyone upstairs. It was an old World War II barracks that are now torn down. And as I was, I got the two recruits and the permanent party person, the corporal, laid them out. You know, I started IVs on them. I could do what I could do, you know, with my, you know, we didn't exactly carry a ER in our pocket, but did what we could do. And that's about it. And I had to wait it out. And as I was so tired. I've already been up 24 hours on a night shift before. And so I laid across a cot between them, and I kind of had like one eye open, half drowsing. And as I heard somebody moving in the room, and I'm like, I said out loud, I said, lay the crap down. Don't move around. You're sick. And then when I opened my eyes, I looked up, and here is a Marine Corps major standing over me, kind of leaned down with his hands on his hips. And he goes, Doc. And well, Doc is what they call hospital corpsman. And he goes, you need to get up now and get these guys out of here. He goes, that tree outside has been banging on the window, those branches. And he goes, I believe you're in some serious danger here. Let's move them, okay? I'm like, and I snapped too. I'm like, holy crap, yes, sir. And we moved them to a safer area in the back. And I swear, as soon as we did that, And we were talking, like 5 minutes after that, we were talking together. The guy looked flesh and blood to me. But I remember I said, hey, you want to step out on the little foyer there and have a smoke? He goes, I can't smoke, is all he said. And I'm like, oh, okay, sorry. And we heard this horrendous crash. And, I ran in there, and there was five bunks in a row, cots, and a tree limb had landed across all of them where we were.
Oh, wow.
And so
let me just be clear here. Sure. At what point did you recognize that the major you saw was not a flesh and blood individual?
Well, right after that, you know, of course, I had a radio with me, and I radioed in immediately. I said, hey, we got a tree, you know, part of a tree through a window here. Everyone's okay. And they said, they radioed back, said, we can't get anybody out there for a long while. Do what you can do. And I turned around and I said, Major, I'm just going to use the name Anderson. I said, Major Anderson, will you look at this stuff? And I'm like, Major? I'm like, what the hell? I kind of got concerned, you know, and so I remember running to the window and forth and I said, Major Anderson. Nobody answers me. And I'm like, oh boy, he's going to be hurt. He's out there hurt somewhere. I can't leave my patients. You know, what the heck do I do?
Yeah.
And so I kind of just, I just kind of hung there. And
Rebecca,
the next morning.
Hold on. Let me just interrupt you for a sec, John. Rebecca. Okay. You know, I hear that story and I automatically start thinking, angel. What do you think when you hear that story?
It could be guardian angel. Humans come back as guardian angels all the time. That sounds human though. It sounds like a human energy that's there to help. I'm watching John, I'm watching as you're talking, and twice now, a white flash behind you. So I was listening to you, but I was listening to what's around you. It's that up around you that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I watched it. I was like, oh my God, there's another one. And it's a circle and it just keeps flashing. And I thought maybe you have a reflection. And then I said, I was listening to you talk and I heard, tell John, I said, hi, just like that. Female voice. Wow. I thought her name was like Shari or Sherry or something. I don't even know, but it was like, tell John, I said, hi. I was like, okay.
Wow. I'm gonna have to get out my diary. I keep diaries from years back, and tomorrow morning I'm gonna be searching.
Britt, when you hear that story, you've got some type of spirit contact that actually has a purpose. It comes because there's impending danger, and it is warning, in this case, John, of something that's about to happen. John has no idea this is going to happen. As soon as he clears the room, this tree crashes through into the building, and the major's gone. What are your thoughts on this?
I have a couple questions for John. In your family tree, do you have any other military people that go back? Maybe a couple great grandfathers ago, or someone who was of rank that would be overlooking you?
Well, my father, Jim, unfortunately, he was killed in 1965 when I was six, building I-71 north through Columbus. And he was a Navy gunner's mate, and he got his boat shot out from under him twice during the Pacific campaign.
Oh, wow.
And he was fine, though. But, and then my mother, this might sound strange, my mother was a Navy hospital core wave during the Korean War. Now all, whether male or female, you're a corpsman. But she was a core wave, and I believe she was either on the USS Bainbridge or stationed at Bainbridge. I don't recall all the way. But her and my Uncle Dick was he was both in the Navy and in the Army. So I got a lot behind me, yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe one of them came back to be your guardian angel, and they knew that they couldn't show up in their uniform they used to wear. So they mm-hmm. adorn something that you would recognize as authority, and then boom. Because bottom line, if they just showed up in civvies, you'd say, get out of here. What are you doing here? You know, I'm not listening to you. I'm in charge here. But if a major came, so that would be interesting if it was some family member overlooking you or extended family member. The other question
that
I
thought of that, Brett, it's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. I never thought about that.
The other thought I have, it being other than you, maybe it could have been one of the sailors that were, or the sick soldiers that were in one of those cots, one of their family members coming back to, okay, I got to go to this corpsman who's in charge here and make him get my kid out of here, my great grandkid, whatever. So that'd be interesting. Sure. Although you can't go back and investigate anymore because they tore the building down, right?
Oh, yeah, that was gone like 2 years after I left. But there's a little end to this story. The next day, military police show up, you know, a couple of ambulances with corpsmen. And I remember telling his name was Petty Officer Willie Miller, best friend I had for 40 years. He recently passed. I told him the story. And, you know, all our nicknames are Doc as corpsmen. But, of course, you can't have a room full of 40 docs. But he nicknamed me Junior for some reason. And I told him what happened, and he looked at me square in the eyes. He was an African-American guy from – he lived in Beaufort. He's from Beaufort South. He goes, now, Junior, he goes, I'm going to tell you something. Don't you ever tell anyone that story for a long time. They're going to put you in a rubber room, son. And I'm like, okay. So, but what I did do is, you know, that – I went home, and they gave us a day off, of course. I went back to the barracks, and I think I slept for like 20 hours. And I got back up. So my next duty day, because this guy told me he was from headquarters company. And
the major did.
The major said, he was from headquarters company. And I remember when everyone got there to kind of rescue us, I said, hey, this guy from, this guy from headquarters company, Major Anderson came around here. And the MP looked at me and he goes, Doc, he goes, they bugged out way long time ago. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. And so I walked over to the two of the patients and I said, you guys saw Major Anderson, right? I mean, he's the guy that helped us put you over here. And both of them, they did have high fevers. You know, they had flu-like symptoms. But they just said, no. One said, Doc, he goes, you just were sitting there jibber-jabbering to yourself for a long time. I just didn't know what the hell you were talking to or what you were talking about. But, you know, you were the one with the IV, so I just shut up.
I'm going to change the subject here in a second here. But before I do, how long did you process this before you kind of came to the realization that you had just had a very significant paranormal experience?
That next day, I went to headquarters company, and I walked in. There's a female sergeant there. And I remember a African-American first lieutenant. And I said, hey, this is what happened to me. This Major Anderson, I wanted to thank him. And the female kind of got a weird look and looked over to the lieutenant. And the lieutenant goes, Doc, he goes, come on back here a minute. So if you've ever been in the military barracks, military setting, there's always awards on the wall, pictures from the past, that sort of thing. So we walked back these two hallways he goes, Doc, he goes, is that who you saw? And I looked up at him. It was the major.
Oh, wow.
In a picture. And I went, oh, man. I said, can I thank him somehow? And he goes, it'd be kind of hard. I said, why? He goes, in 1975, during the pullout in Vietnam, he was killed. And he was actually, this used to be part of headquarters company where you were. And he was stationed at barracks for a year.
Wow.
And he goes, I'm sure you didn't see him, right, Doc? And I'm like, aye, Lieutenant, you got it. You know, he's trying to tell me like.
Right.
The
reason why he was doing that is because a lot of people have seen it and was scaring the recruits away and they didn't want that out. You're not coming to the Honda training ground.
Rebecca, what's the connection like that? I mean, obviously, John didn't know this major, but this major made an effort from wherever he was to come in and perform what was a life-saving communication.
Bless you. Obviously, the people that don't know what I do, I've been doing it for 35 years, and so I do have a background in it. It sounds very much like this major, he resides in that area on the grounds in the barracks that were there, and was absolutely aware and lucid as far as what was going on, which is extremely possible because it happens every day in my house. It happens. So it just happens at Walmart, and these energies just continue to function without skin. And whatever he used to manifest to you that night, massive blessing.
Yeah, for certain.
Maybe the electric, you know, in the air could have been the electricity of the storm.
John, it was 105 mile wind.
That's a lot of energy there too. John, I want you to tell us, because we're going to have to move through some of these things rather quickly because we'll run out of time if we don't. But I want you to tell us about your investigation at Wright Air Force Base or Wright Pat. It's a funny story to begin with. But secondly, I'm curious as to whether you got a sense if any of this talk about that particular military facility housing wrecked alien craft or even remains of alien bodies or anything like that, if you got any information that may support or dispel those ideas.
You know, of course, when you're there, there were like five adult chaperones, and they were part of the scouting group, I believe. And then I think there were like five, six.
Yeah. Tell us how this came to be, so that we understand what you're talking about when you're talking about scouts and chaperones.
Well, they did have overnight stays back then. You know, of course, these days we would never have anything like that, but they would have Boy Scouts stay out there. And it was more or less of it wasn't a ghost thing by any means. It was just a history thing. And it was so cool to spend the night in an area like that. You know, all these planes. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's an absolute outstanding place. It's unbelievable. So, but I was like, they knew I was a ghostie. That's what they called me. And I'm like, hey, what are the chances on me getting out there? He goes, well, for God's sakes, don't tell the Air Force you're a ghost chasing thing. And I'm like, okay, no problem. So I said, I just brought the video cam and the recorder, you know, I kind of in my gear bag. And that night it was, at first you heard footsteps and that kind of spooked some of the kids. And I think before morning we lost a few. Hey, mommy, come get me.
Oh, really? But, one of those deals. Mommy, I want to go home.
yeah. And, we heard this, and of course, you're going to be walking around, all right? You're going to be walking around the museum at night anyway, because it's cool. And I was walking with a couple of the boys, and I don't know if the black helicopter is still there or not. It was a kind of like a Bell Huey type thing. It wasn't a Huey, but it was like a Bell Commander. It had like a bubble front on it, like you see on MASH, but it was kind of filled in instead of the wire stuff they had on MASH. And it had all the, you know, all the switches and stuff in it. So I said, hey guys, just sit in here. And so I turned on my tape recorder and we said, let's just be quiet and see what we hear. And we kept hearing click, 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 click. And I'm like, okay. And these guys are getting kind of freaked a little bit. I'm like, I said, no problem. So I leaned up through the front. And I looked at I took ground school in high school, and I've soloed years ago, but I had a little bit of knowledge of helicopters. Yeah, Brett, you know what a magneto is in an aircraft?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know the sound that a magneto makes when you turn it on? I'm like, in my head, I'm like, that's a magneto. So I leaned up through, and I saw the magneto switches, and they were switched on. So I just reached through and click, click. I said, hey, guys, it's just a little thing flipping up there. They're getting old. So wait a couple more minutes. Click, click. And by that time, the kids are starting to move towards the exit. And I looked up through there again, and both the magnetos were back on. That's so cool. I said, guys, walk around a little bit. So I tried some EVPs, and the only thing I got, and I had to listen so carefully, was George came across twice, and that was it. That's all I could get out of the whole thing. But that's when the ideas of maybe we ought to go home started coming through. But
what year was that? But,
oh, that would be, I gotta think. 85, 90. That would have been in the early 90s, very early 90s, I believe. Without
my
checking,
first episode of Ghost Hunters was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. And you guys did do out there.
Yeah, and I was so good. All you got to see was my foot, my knee, and my elbow. I cut out the entire damn episode. But I know that Bell helicopter. I sat in that helicopter. I investigated. I got to go out to where the Hindenburg crashed at the spot where crashed.
I remember that. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we did an EVP session out there right where it crashed. I mean, that was a cool place. There was a lot of weird shit that went on. I mean, stuff. Sorry, JV. Stuff that went on there. But I do – that museum, there was weird stuff. And there was weird sounds coming from that helicopter. I remember that. And in my mind – There was some pilot going, God, why aren't you starting? Start, you stupid thing. And he's just throwing all the buttons, trying to get the fire off.
So yeah, that entire episode, they saw your elbow and what else? Your foot?
It was my elbow, my knee, and my foot.
John, again, the part B of that question I asked you, did you ever get any sense? Do you have any idea whether or not there's the rumors of alien craft and or remnants of alien bodies? Is there any truth to that in your estimation?
I would say, yeah. I mean, you hear so much of this stuff. And then as y'all were talking about earlier, all this new UFO stuff coming out, starting to put two and two and two together now. And I remember asking you have a Air Force security officer that would let you into the museum and he would be on call, whatever. And I remember just chatting with him, and he knew I was former military. I said, hey, is it really true that you guys got – and he just looked at me, and he goes, if I would say yes, you wouldn't believe me. If I would say no, you would believe me, or something like that. Right? It's something weird. And I'm like – and he just smiled. So – my personal view is, yeah, I think there is.
Yeah, that smile really is the biggest frustration of anybody who is investigating the paranormal. What do you got, Britt?
So when we were investigating there, because I was thinking the same thing, and when we were out walking in the fields and walking around and going out to where the Hindenburg crash, there were – and I can say this because I was never sworn to secrecy. I never signed anything or anything. But there were just ventilation vents in the middle of a field. There would be one over here in the middle of a field. It's like, are we walking on top of a structure of some sort underneath us? And, I mean, we were walking – we were probably at least 3 or 4 football fields wide and long. I mean, a big space, because they were landing planes and helicopters on the area. But there were vents. There were ventilation vents. It was like – and they were working.
Did you get the odor of alien parts coming up through there? Is that what, is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, it was a weird stench. Some green gas was floating out. It was interesting.
Some alien guard or something.
Rebecca, what do you think of all this? I mean, first of all, Wright Pat has an incredible history without the paranormal stuff. But, there's all these little paranormal elements about that particular military facility.
First of all, for the paranormal part of it, I would love to investigate someplace like that. But I know aliens exist because I've actually seen it. Just to get on to any military bases like that, oh my gosh, just to vibe on it, to be there, to remotely view it, to do that would be fantastic. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. John, I want to completely shift gears here because this is a really important story and obviously very important part of you, who you are. Tell us your September 11th, 2001 story, because, that's one of those days like the JFK assassination. We all remember where we were and what we were doing, but you have a particularly interesting story as it relates to this.
The morning that this happened, I was working for as a critical care paramedic on a mobile intensive care MICU unit. And it was owned by one of the major hospitals up there. And it was also a part to that company that was like private ambulance type thing. And I lucked out and didn't have to do the crap calls. But the helicopter, apparently the medevac was down near Stanton or some way far out in Virginia, wasn't working something. So they said, hey, Likens, you and your partner, you got an easy day today because you're going to go to Stanton and get a heart pump patient and grab a nurse and bring them on back. All day event. And I'm like, skate city. Oh, yeah. And so that morning, we're getting our gear ready. And the manager, his name was Shelton, runs out and he goes, "Hey, you two," he goes, "you know what's going on in New York?" And we said, "Yeah." He goes, "You're both volunteer firefighters too, right?" I said, "Yeah, you know." He goes, "You got your gear in your truck? Your own private?" "Yeah, of course we do." And he goes, "Throw it in the side compartment of the truck. Just do it. I'm just telling you to do it." And I said, "Whatever, boss, you know." So we threw our gear in there and I'm like, "Now we got gear to carry. Great." Well, that my partner at the time, we were trying to get to Route 66 to head out that way. And how we can get lost? Well, it is easy to get lost up there at the Capitol Beltway. I'm telling you, even if you've been up there a while, but we were coming down, I think it was 395 or something. And Kevin says, get off here, right here. I'm like, "Dude, I think I know. So we got off and we were on Crystal City Boulevard. And I'm like, "Great." And he goes, "No problem. You know what?" So, and you tell how old this is. We got the map books out. So we're going through the map books and doing this stuff and like that. And then it was the oddest feeling. This is the part I remember most about that day. You hear this. And the ambulance did one of these things. And we looked at each other. And it just didn't dawn on us at first that something happened, like the Pentagon. And then we had four different type radios in the truck for county, city, and in emergencies, we were attached to one of the local fire departments there automatically, like automatic response in a mass casualty. Next thing I know, we were at the Pentagon. Trip canceled. We're at the Pentagon. And we got there, and for the first few minutes, I'm going to be honest, I don't remember the first 10 minutes. I don't know why. You know, I remember going through the gate, and then the next thing I remember is help passing in backboards and then pulling people out on backboards through the people inside pushing them out. And then we went in the triage mode. And, I had to switch in my head from military triage to civilian triage. And all the nurses and doctors showed up and they're setting up tents and things were getting easier. You know, it took a lot of stuff off of us. And they came over to us and said, "You guys are going to be rehabbing firefighters," because you have to understand it's about 800 degrees in a burning building. And you add on the fact it was Jet A fuel and it was still a warmish day and, you know, out in September. These guys were just coming out of there wiped out, you know, so we're starting two IVs on them, monitoring their vitals. And, I can also remember that we didn't have, I'm not drawing a blank here, you forgive me, the new thing set up, Homeland Security. We didn't have that back then. So we had the FBI telling us, "Do this, get back." We had the other Pentagon people saying, "No, go back there." And we had like four different agencies telling us to do things. Because there was no communication. I mean, they weren't on even same the freaking frequency.
It was chaos, right?
Yeah, it was total chaos. And but we were there. I think we logged out. I think it was 14 hours and some. We finally left and went back to the to the station. And
I want to ask you a question about it, and then let Rebecca ask. One of the things that we've even had people on this program that have said. Whether you're talking about the Twin Towers in New York or you're talking about the Pentagon, that the 9/11 attacks were an inside job or there was a missile that flew into the Pentagon and they have it on video or whatever the claims are. What's your response to that stuff?
Well, I can tell you this. Somewhere along the line, you're running like the chicken with your head cut off doing things. And I remember actually looking down and saying, it's one of those weird things, "Oh, part of a landing gear. I step over landing gear," you know? And I said, "Oh, that was weird." You know, you get in this mindset where you're just like trying to make things work. You know, you're trying to get through the call. And so I can tell you that I don't think missiles have landing gears as far as I know. So I don't think it was a missile whatsoever. I mean, at times you think through all this smoke and I wasn't sure, but you could almost see part of a tail of the plane, you know, that was stuck in there. And So I didn't get that close because it was so hot you couldn't, but you could almost make it out. And if you remember that big green fire engine, it was parked right there, and on CNN shots and stuff and shooting water. That's where we were right behind that doing most of our work. And it wasn't a missile. I can almost stake my career on it was not a missile. I mean, landing gear, part of a door I saw, and aircraft door. But I think I may have mentioned this in the paper. I was on a paranormal investigation a while back, and it was with a couple of different groups, and somebody must have told somebody that, yeah, this guy was a medic at the Pentagon or something. And so I was kind of the one. It was like a three group get together, and I was in one of the ones in charge. And this guy comes up to me and he goes, "So, was it a missile?" And you have to understand, we're in the middle of an investigation. And I'm like, "Say what?" And he goes, "Was it a missile?" And I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, is this guy on crack? And so he goes, "No, the Pentagon. Here you at the Pentagon. It was a missile, wasn't it?" And I'm like, I just wanted to get rid of this guy. And
yeah.
I said, sir, missiles don't have landing gears.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
there aren't too many of these conspiracy theories that I get a little defensive about, but that's one of them. Rebecca, did you want to ask John anything about that day? Because, I mean, that's a day that all of us have it burned into our memories, not just when, the planes were striking buildings or striking fields in Pennsylvania, but for weeks after, the aftermath and how the stories started to be told. And you just shared one with us here, John. So, Rebecca, if you've got something you want to ask.
I know what you're saying about the conspiracy theories, and I think, like most people, the love of the country and so forth, it kind of restricts that whole thought of, no, it couldn't happen. Mm-hmm. Our own country, that. And I'm thinking that it was a day that I just, I sat with my mouth open most of the day staring at the TV. And I don't, as far as like a paranormal aspect or a conspiracy aspect, that is probably something that is a totally different Independence Gang topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
I have a question. Yeah. So obviously you were at the Pentagon and processing all that. Since then, in all of your investigations, have you gotten any EVP, any evidence, anything that would make you think that maybe someone from that site that died that day, maybe someone on the plane, someone in the building, is trying to reach out and make contact at all? Or do you have anything that would tie back to that paranormal wise?
I would have to say no. But I would also have to say this. Having PTSD, it affects people different ways and different symptoms. And one of the things I have was I tried to block it out for a long time. And I just try not to think about it. So maybe that, Rebecca can probably throw something on that. I mean, your mind kind of just doesn't want to deal with it. And so of all that, nothing has ever entered in evidence and saying, hey, remember me or something like that. No, I kind of wish it would. That would have been kind of cool.
Huh. Or maybe you should ask questions when you're doing your EVP, towards the end of your EVP session, just throw one out there. Is there anybody here from the Pentagon that was there on, and then see if you get a response. You never know.
I've actually never thought about doing that, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
I mean, because you were there where there was a lot of death. There was a lot of lives that went dead at the blink of at the snap of a finger.
Blink of an eye.
Lots of death. What was it? 300 and something at the Pentagon?
Instant,
and you were there, and that energy has got to imprint on something, and maybe you've got some dragging around with you.
John, let's move on. You've investigated a lot of really, really interesting places. Many of the places that I've seen in the list include places that not just TAPS or ghost hunters have been to, but a lot of people have investigated. But talk a little bit about some of your more interesting investigations, or give us an idea of some of your favorites.
Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, that was great. Eastern State Penitentiary overnight was a real good experience. Houghton Mansion up in Massachusetts. That's about four blocks from my stepson's house. I think, well, Pennhurst was great. I got to investigate with John Zaffis there, Dustin Perry, Dave and Steve, and Samantha Hawes, and the girl from the one medium, God, I just drew a blank. She was Amy Allen was supposed to be there. Apparently, she had a family emergency, couldn't come. But that was a great place. The USS North Carolina is a very interesting one too. But I think if I had to pick a favorite, a overall favorite, it would be a tie between Eastern State and Trans-Allegheny.
When you investigate, I'll ask this and I'll throw it out to anybody else who has a question. But when you investigate, what's your general technique? I mean, we've seen how TAPS does it. We all know essentially how that mm-hmm. works. Do you follow that model, or do you've got a different technique?
Well, I do follow that model. I think I've added on, like, are you allowed to say other names of TV shows?
Yeah,
on
go ahead.
Here?
That's fine. Know. That's fine.
I don't know. I'm definitely not the Ghost Adventures type investigator, but I do use the SLS. I've used the Paranormal Puck 2, and what was the other one I got? And the Ovilus. Now the Ovilus to me has worked occasionally, but it spits out a bunch of random words, as far as I'm concerned. But the SLS and the Paranormal Puck, the ITC, that's pretty interesting. So I do incorporate that. But that little bit mixed with most of TAP's emulation type thing.
Right. I don't know if anybody else wants to jump in before I move topics.
Not on that. I do have some questions outside of that, though.
All right, go for it.
John, you said you were Catholic, right?
Yes, sir.
So do you believe in God? I mean, do you believe? Okay.
Yes.
My other question is, do you believe in ghosts, as grandma not crossing over properly or Uncle Fred's hanging out in the basement? Do you believe in ghosts that we have enough proof to say that they absolutely exist?
I believe that we have enough proof that something exists that is like that, if that makes any sense. I think, you know, there's something there. Is it grandma? Is it Uncle Fred? Is it?
And for some people, that's the same person.
Did Zach Bagans find another ghost under a rock somewhere? I don't. What do you say?
Grandma Fred. He said that some people, that's the same person, Uncle Fred and grandma. Well, my thought process, I personally don't believe, I don't think we have enough information or enough documented evidence to say that ghost, grandma hanging out, we don't have enough information to say they absolutely exist. We don't have enough information to say they don't exist. I think we're still in the search.
They exist. They exist. I will completely argue that 100%.
Okay.
Bless you.
Go ahead. Reed, you take this, Rebecca. Take it.
No, I have seen them with my own eyes. I have perfect pictures of them that people will think that's a person. No, it's not. That is a little boy that was dead. I have video where I brought a little boy home on accident who wanted to hang out with us. He was harassing the boys. They woke up one night and they're like,
"You accidentally brought a baby home? You accidentally brought a kid home?"
I told him you can't come home with me, and he still came home with me. And then the boys woke up and they're like, "Mom, there was a little boy standing between our bed." And I was like, "Great." So I put a camera up and I caught, his name is Gabriel. And he got on the bed with my son and he pulls the blanket and he comes up behind him and pulls the blanket up and then goes down and he gets up on the bed and leapfrogs off the bed. I caught it all on camera.
How old was this kid?
It's freaking amazeballs of everywhere.
How old was this?
How old is
spirit?
Gabriel?
Yeah.
Three, 4 years old. He appeared to be Down syndrome as well. He came from a brothel.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And he stayed with us for about 2 years. I have EVPs of him as well.
That's interesting, JV and the gang here. I mean, you know, when they're Down syndrome or they're on the spectrum, do you think it's easier for them to manipulate through to make contact? Because they're just, I mean, their chemicals are different.
Yeah.
I would love to see that video. That'd be amazing. But my statement was, I don't think we have enough documented evidence. That's what I'm saying. I mean, they could be here. I don't know. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I want that document. I want to do what the military just did by upgrading their radar. I want to be able to see them, talk to them, shake their hands. Kind of like we're about to do with aliens, apparently.
Hey, JV, can I?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Before I get off here, I wanted to say something about PTSD. Well,
hang on, because that was where I was going to go next, actually. I wanted to close out our conversation with this. Obviously, something that's affected you in a lot of ways, and I also want your take on how this affects your life, but also how it affects you in the paranormal community and how it affects your work as an investigator. But you have suffered from PTSD. Obviously, it's very, very serious. It's something we hear more and more about, thankfully, because I think it's creating a greater awareness. But take a minute, tell us how it affects your life, how it affects your paranormal investigating, and then I know you have a message for people who might be suffering from it.
Right. It affects me. At first, it was nightmares like you would never even dream of. You know, people say, I've had terrible nightmares. I'm like, no, you haven't. And another thing is, I was never in combat, and I wasn't trained for combat, but it's like the head on the swivel thing. You know, you're always like waiting for a shoe to drop somewhere on you. And anxiety was horrible. I had some depression, but not a lot. But the insomnia is at times is god awful, and that's how it really affects me. And the other thing was actually the paranormal, I use it as a positive tool. I know that kind of sounds weird. Instead of making PTSD being a hindrance, I kind of make it be a helper. I use that head on the swivel that I seem to get all the time and use it during the investigation. And then I can pick up more. I can see more. I pay attention more. I can use it sometimes with the fact of being – this might fall under medium stuff. I don't know, but – I can seem to feel there's a dangerous situation coming up, like a floorboard missing or something. I just get that feeling and I start, looking around, and by golly, sometimes there is. But I try to use anything I can to, help me with my paranormal investigation. And, why let it pull me down? Why not try to find some way to use it for the good? And I try very hard. I'm still learning.
Well, that's a really healthy way to handle it, to take something that could be a very negative force in your life and try to find a way to turn it into a bit of a positive. Although that probably is a difficult thing to do at times because, it is something that can be very debilitating. But, good for you for doing that, John. And I know that, this is something that because you suffer from it, you take it very, very seriously, as you should. And what's your advice for people or maybe even family members of other people who might be suffering or maybe you suspect they're suffering from it and it hasn't been diagnosed?
Right. All right. There's going to be two parts to this. I'll make it quick. Look, if anyone's listening out there, any of y'all got PTSD or you think you may have it, seeing the symptoms, this seems, I've heard it affects men to the point where they think it's unmanly to go to see somebody. And I'm sure that is unwomanly, I guess, if some females feel that way. I don't know. But no matter who you are, and if you please go talk to somebody, whether it's military PTSD, firefighting, EMS, police, has to do with crime, having a crime committed against you of some sort, go get help. Because I've seen a lot of my friends commit suicide with it. And, please just find some help. I beg you, I implore you, find some help. And I do got to put in one little thing. I just want to say I have the best wife in the world. Her name is Robin, and I met her in 2012, And she is the first person that accepted me with my PTSD, helped me through a terrible, I was homeless for a while. I got into a program through one of the churches and became what was called a trustee there, you know, kind of like working with the staff. And I met Robin and we started dating, and she knew my whole story. She accepted it. And she basically saved my life. I honestly believe that she saved my life. And the other thing I wanted to say is, I think you may have seen the pictures I sent, JV.
Well, I did. I actually grabbed one here to share with folks because I know that this is an important part of your life too, right?
That is Mr. Mike the Lap Chicken. He is now 7 years old. And he's not an official PTSD animal, help animal or whatever, but I'm thinking about getting him certified. But that little guy has made my life so tolerable. And I also have a little conure, it's a bright yellow conure named Molly. And these, you know, Mike's a large parrot. He does talk. Oh boy, he talks. And he's smarter than a whip. And he likes to bow a lot, as you can see on the picture.
Well, that's terrific. And you can see there's a lot of love both ways there in that picture. I got one more question for you, John, then we're going to let you go. Tell us about your organization, Vapes. I guess it's Virginia Paranormal Exploration Society. Tell us about it. And how often do you get out with the group?
Well, not much lately. We did get to go to Henricus Historical Park. I don't know if you ever heard of that down here. It's where Pocahontas was. It's kind of a neat area. I've investigated out there like 4 times now. We got to go out in October with Chris Smith and Mike, I'm going to butcher the name, Concalves from Tennessee Wraith Chasers. And then right before that, we went out with Porter from there. But they also have investigations there for the public and stuff. It's a great organization there, but there is 6 of us, 4 that are all the time there and 2 that fill in. Ah, there's Molly. Yeah. And, they're, a good group of people, but we have not really had much else, you know, nobody wants, now that this thing is starting to wind down, I hope, you know, we're going to be, and there's Robin. And we're going to be getting out there more often now. I've had a couple of phone calls saying.
You've been kind of hampered by COVID, as most of us have, for everything we do. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Oh, look at there. That's the young days right there.
Well, I don't know if Brett or Rebecca, you have anything else you want to ask John about? Otherwise, I think we're ready to let him go so we can enjoy the rest of his evening. Anything? No, I guess we're good.
Oh, first up, I just want to say thanks. I just want to say thanks, John, for your service.
Yeah, thank you. And everything you've sacrificed.
Yes. John, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Your story is fascinating. There's so many parts to it, and we had to gloss over them pretty quickly. Hopefully we'll get an opportunity to have you back on the show, maybe get into a little more detail on some of these things. Now that we've met you, we know who you are. So please stay in touch and give our best to your wife, who obviously has done a great deal for you, took you out of some very low places. So God bless her. And thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
I appreciate you. It was very nice meeting y'all.
All right.
Nice meeting you, John.
All right. Thanks.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by JV Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal, or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.